Hello everyone, it's another exciting episode of the Ukrainian Football Review. It's been a great week in Ukrainian football. We've had players queuing up at McDonald's in Butcher to get a Burger King Big Mac on the way to take a corner. We've had some post-industrialist horrors in Shishlivy on Saturday night, and we've had Vera's march on to their return to the Premier League. But we're here today to talk about the Premier League, the UPL, and we're on the final sort of run-in now to the end of the season. It's all really exciting and heating up. And who else we have with us tonight to sort of dissect what's going on at Dinamo and Shakhtar, one other special club as well. But Cousinho, Yevgen Kuzmenko. Yevgen, great to have you with us. How are you?
Yeah, I'm okay. Thanks. Hello to everyone. Big thanks for your invite second time.
It's great to have you back. It's okay. Very happy to have you back with us. And as always, my wonderful co-host, Mr. Zoria Londonsk, Andrew Tardos. Evening, Andrew.
Good evening, everyone. Looking forward to this. Slightly thought we'd have maybe a quiet little UPL weekend as it restarted following the international break, but I guess the news is far from that.
Certainly is. And of course, the King of North Kiev, keeping Kiev green as always, and dressed wonderfully in green tonight as well. Ray, how you doing, mate?
Evening, Adam. Evening, guys. Great to be here again. And as you rightly put, we are in the end of the, coming to the end of the season, and this part of the season is known in Ukraine as briefcase part of the season.
the briefcase hour. Wonderful, wonderful. So let's kick off anyway. Top of the table, Dinamo travel down to Kirovograd region to take on Alexandria. Andrew, how did it go?
Yep, so Dinamo stay top for another week. 7 points clear. Nice 2-1 win. And I guess it sort of sets them on the sail for that championship title. Was quite an entertaining game for all it's worth. Sort of a dominating display from Dinamo in the first half. But against the run of play, Alexandria scored the opener. Lovely little ball from Baboklo. Touchdown by Kovalets, who was a right nuisance. And then Sitalo finished. That was not before a VAR penalty for Dinamo. Saw Shaparenko score and equalise. And then it was another really entertaining second half where Karavayev looked really sharp, as he has been for the past few weeks. He scored, but his goal was disallowed for offside, well, for infringement by Bujalski on Pankiev. And then super sub and man of the moment, the guy we spoke about last week in our episode about the international week, Gerson Rodriguez, came off the bench and 1-2 of Bujalski, and he finished it past Pankiev. And you know, 90th minute winner, as good as it gets, and all signs lead looking like Dinamo are going to be the 2020-21 champions.
I mean, guys, the other question that we have to ask is, obviously the Plasichny is coming up in a few weeks, but with Dinamo 7 points ahead, can we see them dropping points against any of the other teams in the running? Who else has the ability to take a point, 2 points or 3 points off Dinamo in the remainder of this season?
Let me just quickly do a run through of the teams. So Dinamo still have Dnipro 1 to play, Shakhtar, Inhulets, Vorskla, Mariupol and Kolos on the final day. I mean, just on the basis from my point of view, I think they could probably get through all of those. Dnipro 1's probably going to be tough next week because of the form they're in. But in my opinion, they should get through it.
Does anybody see a penalty shootout on the last day against Kolos?
Might be some sort of controversy going on with the refereeing, but I don't think that match is actually going to be riding on anything. Dinamo might even have the title wrapped up, ironically, if they beat Mariupol on the second last day.
Definitely so. Yevgen, do you think maybe Vorskla or Dnipro have the ability to take points off Dinamo in the running?
Vorskla, I don't agree with this, but SK Dnipro, maybe now he had a very good game, good coach, and good atmosphere, and nice serie.
Good
run of games, and maybe SK Dnipro can do problem Dinamo in the same one head-to-head match, yeah, maybe. My main idea, Dinamo will be champion in this season.
That's great. I'll just say, we mentioned Vorskla there, and they had an opportunity this week against Shakhtar to show that they were sort of taking that step up to the next level. But they failed. If we're perfectly honest, it actually was quite a comfortable victory in the much maligned Marais of sort of the last week, where we were pretty much tearing him to pieces just 5 days ago. Scored two more goals to take him. Was it up to 100 now in 186 games, if I've got my numbers correct? First goal, kind of classic Marais. Second goal, a little bit of a mistake there by young Yakubu. Kind of got pulled out and gave Marais the space to tuck it away on the counter-attack there. Andrew, I'm going to need your help with this one. I'm going to put you on the spot. How many goals does he need now to break Red Bravo and Shatsky's record?
Yeah, so Shatsky and Red Bravo are on 123. So Marais needs 23 goals. Age 34, you'd probably not back him, especially after the season he's had this year where he's not scored many goals. It'll be a tough one. I think Rebrov and Shatsky can rest easy for now, especially with Sereznov out of the picture as well. So, yeah.
Do we see Marais coming back next year, or do Shakhtar need a new centre-forward as a sort of matter of urgency there? Yevgen, what do you think?
I think Marais now in bad form, had bad form, and I think Shakhtar must work in transfer very very active must work in a transfer window for this position with position number 9 center forward, because one good center forward for this team it's not good, and one good forward in cool form, but one good forward in bad form. I think Shakhtar one of main problem in this season. Bad form has their center forward.
I think the other big problem, of course, as a few people have mentioned over the last few weeks, has been the atmosphere in the team, especially as the going's got a bit tougher for them in the camp. The players seem to have turned on Castro from, well, according to, was it Roman Bebek a few weeks back? It started it last summer with Pyatov being dropped for Trubin, and that seemed to sort of set it up. Still, like we saw Tyson play for the under-21s this week. He scored for them, but do we see Tyson making his way back into the first team squad at all? Is he likely to play, was it in two weeks, is it, the Klasichny? Is he likely to appear there at all, guys?
I mean, off just personal opinion, I don't think so. I think, especially if Castro is wanting to assert some sort of authority in the camp, he probably won't have Tyson back, even if it is after one game or something like that. And it looks like the writing's on the wall that he's on his way out sooner rather than later, probably at the end of the season, back to Brazil and Internacional.
It's a sad end, really, isn't it? It's a sad end. It does seem that he, from what we've been hearing, I don't know, Yevgen, if you've heard rumours about the atmosphere in the camp, feel free to join in. But it seems that Tyson's not the only one who's got it in for Castro, shall we say. Maybe he overstepped the mark in the game where he refused to come on as a substitute. But it does seem that there's bigger problems than just removing Tyson and putting him in the under-21s. It doesn't seem like that is going to be the key to solving their season. I'm going to put it out there. If Castro goes, does Tyson stay?
No way. I think he just wants to go. He's wanted to leave even before I think Castro came. So I think that's really it.
It's goodbye, goodbye. Now, Yevgen,
no,
as we've got you here, we have to ask you.
now Tyson have scored a goal for Shakhtar U21. It's very, very funny. And my friend work in Shakhtar U21, and he said, wow, Tyson, very cool boy. He good. He joke. Norm. Yeah, and he very, very good talking with football, with players, and not такого пренебрежительного отношения, да, как это красиво сказать, yeah. Что
No. Andrew, help us out here, Andrew.
I don't know, toxic behavior like he's doing in the first.
Yeah. Yeah, he good teammate. Yeah, he good teammate for players of Shakhtar U21. It's a surprise for me.
He's made his bed, I think, and he's. That's it. There's no more need to sort of cause any more problems.
He's more than happy to lie in it as well. Now, of course, with Yevgen here, it's important that we take some time tonight to discuss Olympic as well. And they took on the set-piece specialists, as I'm going to start calling them, from Chernihiv. I watched them play. They seemed to score from a corner. Tatarsky was the lucky recipient this time from another well-worked corner routine. And now, correct me if my pronunciation's wrong here, guys. It is one of those difficult ones. Bez Boradko finished off a really nice move. It's one of those, if Olympic had been in better form, you would have said, brilliant goal, but you kind of watch it going, what's going on in the defence as he taps it, finishes it into an empty net with the goalkeeper on the floor and a couple of centre-halves rolling around, claiming all sorts. It was, of course, the Kalifintsev derby, father against son. Son was victorious. Dad seems to be struggling and Yaya seems to be struggling. we're not quite sure what's gone on with Olympic, but it's now 7 defeats on the bounce since the return from winter football. Because I was a bit unsure of their fixtures beforehand. I had a look and it was Ingelets, Manai and Ruck they played in. No, Ingelets, Ruck and Lviv were the last three games they played before the winter break, and they only took 4 points from the 9 there as well. There seems to be some bad form going on there. Yevgen, what, from your perspective, what's the atmosphere in the team at Olympic at the moment, and where do you see sort of the fundamental problem with what's going on there in Olympic?
In my opinion, the main problem of Olympic is manager decision, in particular in the decision of head of this club, President Vladislav Herzen. Who, no secret, is a very impulsive person, yeah? And here is another impulsive decision about the dismissal of a coach in the middle of the season. It's crazy for me, decision. And now it is very difficult for Yuri Kalitvintsev to start quickly introduce something new, something mine. Very difficult. The team football players. Yeah. The club. The team changes coach too often. Too often the players are forced to work differently. Yeah, they must do this, and it's very difficult for football players. Football players often it's very easy boy. They don't love difficult. No, he like easy. And now in this club, always situation difficult. And for players, it's very hard. Yeah, and I have a question about the level of coaching qualities Igor Klimovsky. But I don't believe that the situation now forced him to fire. I think this fundamental problem for this club because we know club and team, it's another organism. Yeah, team, club, football players. Managers and this one important organism, but in this club, not all time. It's very for this situation in Olympic. I think maybe 5, maybe 6, maybe 7 years. It's not a surprise, unfortunately.
Well, it's funny you say that because I was. As I was preparing for this tonight, I remember back to the start of the season, way back in, when was it, July, August, when we were discussing them. And I think everybody in the podcast that day, we all had Olympic as our favourites to go down. This was before Zahidi sort of kicked off and really surprised us during the first half of the season. And we all thought, hang on a second, this is a club that's, like you said, it's been struggling for a while and always seems to be in a bit of turmoil with things. So maybe is that the case that Zahidi's form between sort of September and November almost diverted attention away from these issues, these problems that you've mentioned there, Yevgen, and kind of made the... I don't know what's the word, maybe, you know, sort of hit the problem, shall we say, from our view as viewers on the side.
Yeah, I mean, well, we can see clearly that now that there's no Zahidi, they're not really scoring goals. They're creating a few chances, I think, in their matches, but they just can't finish anything. That Nkeng looked like he was going to start being quite good when he first joined, but he's not really shown much. And I guess the longer this winless form carries on, probably going to get even worse. I mean, they've got Kolos coming up next, so maybe there might be a change, but you never know.
Not sure. One last question before we move on. Obviously, Yaya Toure's arrived in January, and correct me if I'm wrong, Sergei Rebrov attended some training sessions last month in March, and they've had a number of TV cameras sort of at putting extra attention onto the team because of these big name players or former players who have been involved in the club. Could that have added any extra pressure or created a new perception in the players that they are now no longer the players they were sort of pre-Yaya Toure, and all of a sudden they've got a bit of Yaya magic on them, and now they take on a new attitude, perhaps? It's a question for you guys. I'm not sure. There's certainly something seems to have changed there. And say Yaya's, as much as his playing career was, you know, an incredible success, his coaching career so far is, well, it's 0%, isn't it? Three months in. Let's hope it picks up soon. But anyway, Yevgen, have you attended any of the training sessions there with the kids, the under-19s or the older ones since the winter break?
Sorry, maybe I understand the question at all, but about Yaya Toure. I know he had a problem with coach license with a pro. Yeah, he can't do this license because this coach courses UEFA Pro will start 1 of 2 years, and now they started in last September, now in 2020. Yeah, and Yaya Toure can't coach main team, can't, and maybe he can coach U21. Yeah, I think he can. But I don't know. Will Yaya Toure coach? I know. One of important for me as Olympic team. U19 win four match and have one draw for 6 games in this year. It's
there we go.
Yeah, it's crazy, and I'm very happy with this situation because head coach for this team, my friend, and I telephone with him. What do you do? You're crazy. It's very cool, and they up to table. Yeah, maybe four or five position. It's very cool for Olympic as club. They team U19 do reputation club. It's funny, but It's true.
Ah, that's brilliant. That's brilliant. Oh, thank you, Evgen. Well, moving on. Shall we take the bronze team presently in bronze medal position? Zarya Lugansk. Obviously, they travelled to Lviv this week to take on Ruk. COVID has caught up with Zarya and who was it? Favorov and Venidub both actually been put in hospital. I haven't read if they've been released, but they were certainly in hospital with it. That looks like it could be a two weeks plus that they could be missing from the back line. Surprisingly, with those two, Aladiara, Klaki and Nazarina were also benched, as Skripnik kind of put a real makeshift team out. Vromov, who's does pick up the goals when he gets game time, scored two. It was quite a comfortable victory for the team. But Ivan Isenia was also sent off for what was probably one of the most comical second yellow cards I've seen in a while. When I missed it first time around, so when I was asking what he got sent off for, he said arguing with the referee, and it wasn't really arguing, was it? He just kind of pointed something. I'm not quite sure what was said, but a second yellow card was given. After the game, he said he was sort of explaining why the referee should have booked the fella who dived in the box. But hey, he's going to be missing now for two games, I believe, the Ingoletz and the Vorskla game, according to the reports I've read. So that's another player missing from their back line next week anyway. I'm not quite sure who will play there. Away from the pitch, though, it would be rude not to talk about the Aladeo scandal, because Denisov put out a report this week into what's sort of been going on there. And I'm getting confused, I have to say, with Aladeo, because now I've had the third different buyout clause quoted to me at 2.5 million euros. You may remember previously we spoke about 3.5 and 1.5, and now I've heard 2.5 mentioned this week. But story as it stands is Fenerbahce signed the young boy just before COVID hit, hoping to sort of play him in the youth team. Not really, you know, it's one of these working prospects. But with the cancellation of the leagues, they quickly rushed through the loan. And the claim is they didn't really, they thought, okay, 2 years, this guy's not going to develop too much over the 2 years, then we'll take a look at him. They even agreed to pay 2/3 of his wage. They're paying 20,000 euro a month, and Zarya are picking up the last third at 10,000 euros a month. They were that confident. But since the success that saw him, was he player of the month in the UPL, wasn't he, last month, or just for Zarya?
I think it was February, yeah.
February, sorry. And, you know, Fenerbahce have got in touch and said, hey, we want our boy back. And rumour has it that you may recall a few weeks back we mentioned that Shakhtar were interested in him. But that now is... it's claimed has been a planted story by Fenerbahce, and the true story is that Fiorentina are now interested in him, and sort of Zarya are going, hang on a second, we've got an agreement that we can take him for 2.5 and then we can sell him to the Italians for three times the money. That's not a problem whatsoever. And Fenerbahce want to cash in on him because they weren't expecting anybody to offer this much. But it's certainly an interesting, it's an amusing little story going on there. I think the Turkish team certainly aren't covering themselves in glory anyway. But yeah, thank you to Mr. Denisov for putting that article out. I had a giggle whilst I read it. Anyway, but there we go. Yeah, Zarya are in third place. I mean, 2 weeks, next week they've got Ingoletz, but then the week after it's Vorskla. Now, maybe for me, when I saw that game coming up, is that the game where third place could be sort of finalised. If Sarria get through that game, they will have played Desna twice, played Dinamo, played Shakhtar. If they get through the Vorskla game, are they then home and host in third place? Gents?
Yeah, I'd say so. I think Zorya look comfortable, even with their sort of COVID stuff. I think they've still got a game in hand. And with that in mind, I think they're just above Desna and Vorskla to sort of pip them to it.
Yeah, cool. Minai. Hey, they've been having some fun, haven't they? This week, Andrew.
Yeah, they have. So I was watching their 0-0 draw against Kolos. That wasn't actually not much to even say about that game. That was there was about two shots on target from both sides and nothing else. Very boring match. But I mean, it was a point shared and a vital point for Minai in the relegation battle. However, the news for Minai this week was more controversial off the pitch. On the match day, sporting director Mihailo Kopalovic retired as a footballer, age 37. And over the break, Vasil Kobin left his managerial role as well. So it's all very weird behaviour going on over there. And then also Oleksandr Savidov, who Ray... give us his nickname.
Was it Grim Reaper?
The Grim Reaper of UPL clubs. He's got a track record of joining teams that suddenly end up dying or folding or something like that. So, bit of a weird one. He was being rumoured to replace Kobin, but ultimately he didn't. He's like some sort of technical advisor or something like that. Difficult to actually put a name to it. But instead, Vasil Kobin's assistant, Simbal, has got the job for now. And I guess he's going to be there until the end of the season. However, the main news from all this Minai controversy issues and sort of even questioning whether Minai might even finish the season is that their owner, Valeri Peroslyak, has been added to a list of sanctions by the National Security and Defense Council of Ukraine due to illegal contraband activity. And it means that apparently some of his assets in Ukraine have been frozen and potentially might be some sort of criminal proceedings. No one knows exactly what it's entailed, but there's obviously, this has sort of probably been the biggest news in the UPL over the past week, and it sort of causes doubts into what the sort of quite cool project, as we've discussed on the pod a few months ago with the marketing team there, what's going to happen to the club? Who knows?
It's going to be an interesting one. It'll be very hard for certainly for him to carry on if these charges stick. Right, I've got to ask you. Obviously, the Grim Reaper, Savidov. What clubs has he killed in the past?
Well, you can count Stal Dnipro Kamensk, and obviously there were Hoverla, Metallurg Donetsk. And the last of them being Karpaty.
How does he get a job? How on earth has he got a job?
Well, he's a charming man. He's really, you know, he's got his moves, I would say, skills.
Oh yeah, I'd love to get his job interview technique, definitely. If he can get a job too. Anyway, moving on. Now, start the show, we were talking about Dnipro 1 as potential team to take points off Dinamo later in the week. Ray, absolutely smashed Lviv, am I right?
Yeah, obviously, seems like Lviv has had some hangover on those briefcases I mentioned before, as the first one of them traveled to their grounds after their perfect victory against Shakhtar. Rumor has it, Dynamo were the party which delivered the briefcase, but we never know. It seems to be stopped there, as we heard from Shakhtar and Dynamo that they are not going to be involved in this anymore. Anyways, Lviv was crushed by Dnipro 1 in this particular game. Alvaro scored for the Lviv team. Remember this guy from earlier this year scoring two goals against Minai right after the winter break? Here he comes again. Although he's not a saver this time, as Mario Chuja is on his way upon the top of the league, as he already has four goals scored under his belt. In this game, he scored two, one of them being a perfect one, just finishing from the line after the corner. That was pretty hard to miss, actually. Artem Dobik also has three goals starting from 2021. He didn't score in this game. Although we have to admit that Jovicevic's run is quite impressive in this year after the winter break. He is still unbeaten. He won five games and drew in two of them. So we might question his ambitions regarding the Europa League or at least Conference League place. We'll see about that further, especially when he has an exam with Dynamo coming up next week. I also gathered some stats from all the matches which we had six or seven goals scored this year so far, and there are five of them, and one of them should be coming up from us, as I watched one game as well.
Yeah, well then, what was it?
Mariupol in Hulitz, 4-3 is the scoreline. So we have these five games this season so far, starting from Vorskla Ruch, 5-2, Oleksandriy in Hulitz, once again, 4-3, Olympic Mariupol, 3-3, mentioned before, Dnipro 1, Lviv 5-1, and the game itself, Mariupol in Hulitz. Have to mention that in Dnipro 1, there is a guy from Shakhtar who is Pihalonok, who surprisingly not from Mariupol, and he's got a perfect assist for the last goal of Dnipro in this game. So he might be on the checklist from Shakhtar in the end of the season, as well as some of the guys from Mariupol, like the defensive midfielder Cech and Artem Bondarenko, who scored a hat-trick in this game and took home a match ball. Although there was this, you know, hard-working hat-trick, as you scored two penalties. And the third goal is being delivered by the keeper, a magnificent howler from Mali, from Inhulets. Overall, Mariupol attacking mostly by left side. Four or five attacks seems like a template from them. The horrid defensive display have to be mentioned by Inhulets. Never know what they were doing in that box throughout all 90 minutes. Equalized in the second half, however, Ilya Kovalenko scoring this Giroud Van Persie style diving header and not celebrating it. That's some tough business from Ukrainian Premier League, I should say. So that's it. One good match, one not so good in terms of quality, but we have some talents for Shakhtar lined up, as Artem Bondarenko scoring a hat-trick, Osheretko being as creative as always, and yeah, it should be... Mariupol shouldn't be relegated this season, that's for sure. And Inhulets is straight behind them, below in the table. Well, there are 6 points in this relegation zone within six teams, so there's everything to play for, but really... They have a coach, and well, after all, we have Mladen Bartolovic in this squad, and we wish his team all the best.
Thanks for that. You mentioned there, obviously, Bondarenko, Archeroco. Do we see them? Have they impressed enough to get a chance at Shakhtar next year? Is there anyone there who really deserves a chance? Right.
Well, as I just said, Bondarenko struggled to score a hat-trick. I would say he was pretty lucky this game. Ocheretko was delivering his usual performance since the restart of the season in winter. The defensive midfielder, Maxim Cech, I believe, this is his name. I just remember his surname. He's good. He started all the games for Mariupol this season, unless he was injured. And, you know, he's one of the guys who is invisible, but he creates a difference in every game. So those three are probably should be picked up by Shakhtar on their short list, as well as Pihalonov from Dnipro 1.
Cool. Well, moving on, though. And been any standout performances from our boys across the European leagues this weekend?
Yeah, I guess now that all the Ukrainian sides are out of Europe, we're going to make this a bit of a more regular occurrence on the pod, just to give a bit more visibility on how the boys are doing across the continent. So Ruslan Malinovsky came straight back from international duty, started against Udinese, got himself two assists in a 3-2 win, and another sort of one of the best stats performances in Serie A for the weekend. So solid from him. Hopefully he can continue in that vein until the end of the season, as he's going to be key for Ukraine in the Euros. His countryman, Viktor Kovalenko, did not make it on. He did not add to his already 7 minutes in Serie A. Whether we'll get an improvement on that going forward, who knows. Moving on to the EPL, I guess, the Premier League. Zinchenko did not play for Man City. He was rested. They've got a big Champions League match against Borussia Dortmund coming up. So hopefully he'll feature in that one. Whilst in Belgium, Yaremchuk came back from international duty and did not have the best of games. He sort of did a sort of a tell-all interview with Ihor Bourbas, discussing certain things, like he was being thrown out by Dynamo, hence why he ended up going to Ghent, and other things which are quite interesting. So if anyone wants to watch that, that's on YouTube.
I will.
However, he missed a penalty in this game. So did his teammate, and ultimately they lost 2-1. So not the most positive result for Ghent. Whereas countryman Sobol started for Club Brugge, league leaders, runaway leaders, and he scored an absolute worldie from the edge of the box. Just pinged it from sort of like a half volley and it went straight into the corner, and then he won the penalty for Bruges to win it, and they won 2-1. And another sort of, I don't know if this is positive news or what, but Alexander Filipov got himself 1 minute of game time against Marian Schwed's KV McKellen. Shred was injured for this game, but yeah. So I don't know what's going on really for Filipov there. I saw he had an interview. He gave a few comments for Tato Taker in their most recent episode last week and said that it's been difficult for him. The new manager's sort of not been too helpful because he's not really favoured me, and they've got a really informed centre forward, Japanese Yazuki guy. So yeah, I don't know. It looks like he might be on his way out. Where he's going to end up after Belgium, who knows?
Well, what I'll have a little dive into the details, I think, over the next week. Find out how long his contract is. Particular, I don't know why my gut says a loan back to Desna next season. That's what I'm seeing. I mean, it's got to feel sorry for him. He was handpicked by a management team that was sacked 4 months later. These things happen in football, and especially when you come from, you know, it's an Aussie in charge there now, Kevin Muscat, I think. And his probably his knowledge of Ukrainian football may not be the greatest, shall we say. I doubt he'll have watched Desna play too many times last season. So it's just one of those where he's going to favour his own players, his own boys. Which is a shame for Filipov because it was his big chance over there. Who knows, he may go to Croatia and play with Chabenko. Now, I might have been dreaming this, but what's been going on with Ruzin at Legia? Does anyone know? Right.
Yeah, the latest news are that he refused to play for their reserve squad after saying that there's a high risk of getting an injury. And therefore, he now needs to apologize for these attitudes of his in order to actually have an opportunity to play for the reserve team. As he obviously wouldn't, as they obviously do not want him to start for the senior one. Well, talk about some stuck up character.
Definitely. I mean, that's sort of game over. We talked about game over for Tyson. Is that his last chance?
Yeah, it doesn't look like it's worked out for him there at all. And I mean, I think Nazari Rusin himself, that was some sort of rumour from Borbas coming out, and I think some Polish journalists as well. But Rusin's come out himself saying that that's apparently not true, and he only didn't want to play on an artificial pitch because it was hurting his shoulder or something like that. So I don't know. It seems like all a bit of a mess there, really.
Yeah, but he has a history of this. As we remember some interview, we remember him quoting that he refused to play to go on loan from Dynamo and. Because he was afraid of the rivalry in the forward position. So that's why he decided to stay in Dynamo, and there he goes.
Again, we see it sometimes with talented youngsters coming through who don't have the right mentality to make it at the top level. It could well just be that case with him. He's certainly not covering himself in glory. This move did seem like a last chance, shall we say, for him, and it's not working out. Anyway, guys, I think we've absolutely hammered it there, mullered it, as we say. It's been a great one, though. Big thank you to Yevgen for joining us and giving us all the wonderful insight earlier on into Olympic Shakhtar Dynamo. For those of you at home, tune into his Cousinho pages on Instagram, and I always forget where else he is, but I do. I know he's on Twitter, that's where we communicate a lot as well. Andrew and Ray, people who want to follow you, where's the best place for them to follow you, especially for our new listeners out there?
Mine would be Instagram, Auburn Casual.
Thank you.
And for me, Zoru Londonsko on Twitter and Instagram.
Thank you, thank you. A big shout, special shout out to those people in Cyprus who've been listening to us. It's been great to have you on board. I hope you've come back for more. Give us a like, subscribe, drop any comments. We love hearing from you all. Till next time, of course, I'm Adam Peoplepod 24, as well as being another great episode of the Ukrainian Football Podcast. Take care and goodbye, everyone. Bye-bye for now.